Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.
So, welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, and this is going out live on Mintwave Radio. If you already have the Alexa skill, you can just ask Alexa. Otherwise, go to the website above, mintwave-radio.com, to download it. Or if it's via podcast, you can also download the app for Apple and Android for any of the shows that are on the weekly schedule. Feel free to subscribe to any that take your fancy, follow them, leave a comment. Today's episode is 176, and today we have Bill Murphy, and he is an author, coach, speaker, and entrepreneur. And today we're going to be talking about thriving in the storm. My name is Karen Roberts, giving a platform for coaches to get their message out there to people who need to hear it. So, Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Karen. Excited to be here. I want a cup of woo-woo.
Have you got your cup of coffee? With or without woo-woo? Now, Bill is a marathoner, an ultra marathoner, an Ironman finisher, and has a second degree black belt in Krav Maga. You're going to have to explain that. I've not heard of that one. He has raised over $500,000 for the Make-A-Wish Foundation and actively supports several charities, including Fairway Cares, the American Warrior Initiative, and the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. He is the founder of the nonprofit Thrive Foundation. Murphy has a bachelor's degree in psychology from Worcester State University and a master's degree in counseling psychology from Framingham State University. So, a very impressive resume there, Bill.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. My pleasure to be here.
Would you like to share with the listeners a little bit more about your actual backstory and how you came to be doing what you're currently doing?
Yeah, so I've been in sales for 25 years in the real estate mortgage lending space. Before that, when I was trying to figure out what I was going to do in college, I got a master's in counseling psych. I thought I wanted to go that route, and worked with juvenile locked up inmates. And it was for 5 years. It was a thankless job because you would work with these kids for several years and watch them get back out onto the streets and reoffend horrific crimes or not come back to tell about it. So it was a real quick burnout in my 20s. And I fell into the mortgage real estate space and have been in it ever since.
And so now you're talking about thriving through the storm. So would you like to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that came about just, we're all capable of way more than we ever thought possible. And I found myself always overcoming as a kid without necessarily the tools, the super talents that a lot of my peers had, whether it was athleticism or academics or art, artistry or musicians or whatever. I always had to grind and work hard and push through to just keep up. And it was when I did an Ironman in 2019, after just 6 months of training, after a marathon, where I thought that these people that swim to 2.4 miles, bike 112 miles, and then swim and then run a marathon on top of that, I thought they were just superhuman. And so I declared that I was gonna train for one in 6 months, which pretty much everybody said was impossible to do. And I put my head down and was grinding. It's not like I was swimming, I was biking, the only thing I was doing was running, but I started to train and believe with a lot of failures involved throughout where I wanted to quit. The anxiety was pretty overwhelming. And I remember sitting in the pool when I was training and I was like, I hadn't swam in 30 years. I hadn't biked and I didn't have a bike. I had to get one. And so when I was training swim, I sat on the edge of the pool saying, this is too much. What did I sign up for? And really what kept me going was that I told my kids I was going to quit. And so I just, there's one thing I never do or did is quit. You can fail. You can fail and fall down really hard. But quitting has never been an option for me. And I think that's why I've always been able to manage some sort of success in business, sales, and athleticism, because I never quit. And would just, if I commit to it, we're going to do it. And if we fail along the way, we're still going to get up and keep trying. And that's where the premise came out, is we're all capable of more than we think we are. When I finished that, I said, you know what? I've been journaling my whole life. I've been writing notes about overcoming and getting through adversity my whole life in forms of journaling. And so I was like, I think there's something here. When I was writing it, COVID happened, and I started to realize that a lot of people, high performers, were down and out, and they were just really bordering depression. And, you know, I saw it with a lot of kids. My own kids were going through college and high school during COVID, and they were struggling, and they were very outgoing, and they were struggling because they didn't see their peers. Adults didn't see their colleagues or peers at work during COVID, and family and everything else. We were all pretty much locked down. So then I started to notice what was going on there. It's like some people are the victim of the circumstances, and they're laying low, and they're not getting out of bed, and they're not productive, and they're not doing things to better themselves. Others are just getting by and zombie-like and showing up, but just not present. And then there was those that were still thriving. And those were the ones that, hey, we're all in the same situation, and we're all battling right now because it was a real unfortunate time, but we're doing things to continue to move forward. And if we are feeling low levels of emotions like fear, doubt, angst, anxiety, anger, hostility, depression, whatever, it's really hard to create, and it's easy to stay in that victim of our circumstances mode. In order to start to get to the thriving levels, practicing those positive emotions, those high level of emotions. And I know you're all about that, Karen. And those positive emotions are enthusiasm, joy, love, zest for life, peace, happiness. And that's where we're able to create. And I just found myself just striving to be in those high levels of emotions to get there every single day so I could be productive and try to help my family and peers.
And what do you think is the real difference? Because, yeah, you're right. Everybody falls into one of those brackets, don't they? And obviously, this happens every single day. However, it was just so impounded, obviously, because of COVID, because of lockdown, because it was global. Nobody got out of this. But what would you say is the real difference from the people? Because obviously, nobody does it deliberately. Nobody does it, presses that self-sabotage button and falls into that victim mode. But we know that's what's holding them back. But what is the difference? Why are some people seeing things slightly differently and doing the things or having even the discipline, really? Because it takes discipline, right? It takes practice. We're not all happy all the time. Everybody's going to have these ebbs and flows, but the ones who are thriving somehow have found a way to be disciplined enough to practice the things that they need to do to stay in a positive mindset.
I think the number one thing is the purpose and the why strong enough. We drift oftentimes from what we set out to do because it loses its luster, it loses its value, it loses its shine, and we're not going to reach for it. So you may have to find more purpose in that, in our motivation, or maybe it's not important enough, but we got to identify what's important to us. Like I mentioned earlier, like declaring to my kids that I was going to do something was important enough for me to keep doing it, no matter how painful or how much out of my comfort zone I was. And I think when we do start to drift, we have to search consciously, because we're drifting unconsciously. We have to find the awareness that this is happening and search consciously for that purpose again and identify whether it's strong enough or not. And we need to understand that our whys and our purpose and our mission is going to change over the years. When I got into sales 25 years ago, I was going to succeed in spite of what everyone else said. And that was my motivation because I was very competitive and I was just going to outwork everybody. But now I have three kids in college, two teens and a 23-year-old. And 23 years ago, my why changed. My why was now I'm doing this for a family. And now that's okay to change your why and change your purpose. So check in. You may be pursuing something that you thought was important 5 years ago. It may still be important, but is it important enough to not just throw in the towel and say, you know what, I'm just gonna survive and get by right now and I'm not gonna pursue it. So I think that's important. And if it's not important enough, then don't do it. Go find something else that is.
Yeah, you're right, because this is said so many times, isn't it? Everybody says you've got to have your goals written down. Everybody's heard this a million times, but do they have it? Just because they've heard it, they still are not necessarily doing it. Or like you say, yeah, things change. Now, my goal years ago was to own my own fitness studio. I set out for certain goals. I got there and then realized that, oh, actually, maybe this isn't quite what I want, because I've just actually bought myself a full-time job and this actually isn't even sustainable because the business has been built around me. So my goal changed because I realized from achieving it that, oh, I chose the wrong goal. It wasn't the right building block. And I suppose that's the issue, isn't it? People think that, okay, that is that specific goal. And then what am I going to do when I get there? That's why it is so important to reevaluate them. And you don't know. If I hadn't got that goal, it might still be a goal of mine now. Because I hadn't achieved it and then realised that, oh, actually, I don't know whether I do want this anymore, it would still be something maybe I wanted, because we don't know until we get there if this is the thing that we actually want. Isn't that right?
Sometimes the anticipation of what we set out is more powerful than actually hitting it.
And absolutely.
That's where the dopamine rush is in the, I think it's in the chase than actually the climax of it, reaching where you want to be.
And which is why I suppose so many, when you hear of, I know, astronauts, they suffer with depression because if they've had this massive goal maybe that they've had since they were a child and they've achieved something that is so like massive. And then all of a sudden you're there and then, well what next? Because as human beings, we are, we're growth orientated, aren't we? If we're not growing, we are disintegrating, which is why when be careful what you wish for, when people think, I want to retire at age whatever, and you think, really? We all need something to strive for, because otherwise, I'm sure I would get complacent, I would get lazy, I would, if I didn't have something to, we need things to get up for and to strive for, don't we?
Yes, we do. Absolutely.
With what you're doing, put my hands up, I only ever did one marathon.
Agreed.
London Marathon is always around my birthday. So when I hit a milestone, I was going to be 30. So this is going to be the year I was going to run a marathon. And then I said, I'll do it again maybe when I'm 40. And then that decade went a little bit too fast. And then it went to 50. And now I'm like, nah, I don't think. But the thing with a marathon is it's almost like absolutely anybody can do it, like anybody can achieve anything.
Right.
But you've got to do the work. There's no getting out of it. You can't just say you're going to go and run 26 miles and only after you've only ever done 5 miles in your life. It's just not going to happen. It's just never going to happen. So there's no magic pill. There's no magic formula. It is what it is. You have to follow your training, or at least I didn't totally follow the training that would normally be for marathon runners, because I was teaching fitness so much. So I was doing a lot on already. But it just means that you have got to practice. So you've got to have some kind of habitual pattern. Do you think that is what, and I suppose the second one, even more Ironman, you're crazy to finish with a marathon. But isn't that the key? Is that somehow you've got to have these habitual patterns, and it does, they don't have to be massive, but they have to be done.
Yeah, when you set out to do something, you need a roadmap to get there. You need the program. You need to have a coach, or you need to have a plan laid out to hit it, or you're going after something, you're going to fall off course because you don't have direction. So whenever you do set out to do something like a marathon, you need to get at least a plan, a course plan, or a running plan, or whatever, just a training plan. And so many people, like you said, Karen, it's possible, but I have so many people say to me, I could never do that. I could never. If it's important enough to you to try, then you could. And even with physical limitations, we see what some of these athletes do that are physically limited and able to accomplish it. So I don't want to even say without physical limitations, there's always a way to get it done if you have the right plan.
And you have a strong enough desire. You've got to have that strong desire. That's where it all starts from, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It starts with the desire of the end goal.
So for you, so marathon, ultra marathon, and Ironman, that's pretty tough. But what you just said earlier, that you didn't listen to the naysayers, you didn't listen to the people said that it couldn't be done because you've chosen to do it in 6 months. And I've got to say that I would have said that's pushing it. But what made you just keep going for that goal? Yes, you had the accountability, and that's probably key with having a coach or anything, is having that accountability. You really put that on your kids because you've announced it to your kids. That was your accountability? Is that how you felt?
Yeah, that was my accountability, but my motivation was a little deeper than that. My motivation was, when you tell me I can't do something, I'm gonna try that much harder to get it done. And that's how I was raised, that I was never made to feel good enough, worthy. I was always overcoming the self-doubt and unworthiness and lack of confidence. Always, to this day I still battle with overcoming those feelings, because it was ingrained in me when I was a kid growing up that nothing was ever good enough, nothing was ever going to meet the standards with my dad. So that's where that all stemmed from. So my motivation my whole life was, I'll show you I'm worthy, I'll show you I matter, I'll show you that I'm going to amount to something. And that was my fuel. So when someone says, at 48 years old, like, dude, that's not enough time for you to train. I'm like, okay, get me somebody that will help me understand what I need to do, and I will follow it to the T and die trying. And go ahead.
Isn't it interesting, though, that some people, like many people, I mean, they say that everybody is suffering with some kind of childhood trauma, and quite a lot of those things are not feeling worthy, not feeling enough. And what do you think is, again, is the difference? So you have come out, I'm going to show you. Why do some people allow it to affect them in the negative way and they do give up? What's the difference, do you think?
So I studied psychology so I could understand this. There's a test. It's called the Adverse Childhood Experience Test. I actually took it. And a clinician of mine who was going through the scores with me said, statistically, you should be dead or in jail based on your childhood trauma. And he said most people turn to drugs, alcohol, violence, gang activity, obsessive compulsive eating, obsessive compulsive gambling, pornography, you know, whatever. I turned to extreme workaholic. Like, I would just work to show you that I'm, to show you that I'm, to show that I can get by no matter what. And also the extreme sports stuff. So that was my cover up. But that wasn't without its problems. Yes, it was the lesser of the evils of turning to violence or turning to addiction to be an extreme workaholic. But the angst I carried home, the tension I carried home and took out on my kids, yelling at them when I'm trying to work and not be present, that the TV's too loud, and being on my phone all hours of the day when I'm having a conversation with my family, like that was the angst and tension and worry that I carried around with me until I figured out that I needed to do some serious work on myself. So that was what I dealt with my traumas. See, so a lot of people have had the traumas and they've dealt with whatever they've self-medicated. And again, mine was extreme workaholism and losing myself in my sports, and others turn to other things to cope.
Yeah, so they're all just coping mechanisms. And yeah, like you say, so for you, it helped you in certain ways, but didn't help you with your family, because yes, that workaholics is, being a workaholic is not a good thing. It's all about balance, isn't it? It's all about balance. That's what we're all looking for, isn't it? We're all trying to get some kind of balance. But for you, with regards to thriving in the storm, how do people really go about doing this, and so that they have a healthy reactions to, at the end of the day, we've all got certain childhood traumas going on or playing out, but what can they do to change?
Yeah, if you think that an adversity or a challenge obstacle is really getting the best of you and railroading your path, what I do is, and some certain things that I would recommend. Number one is find your blessings. What can you be thankful for in the moment? Because chances are you're feeling down and out about yourself. So what can you be thankful for that's actually happening in your life, in the world? Write, journal it. Put it in your notes, in your phone notes. Put it somewhere. Put something that you're, send them out into the universe or your higher power, what you're thankful for. One of the other things that I like to do is, if I'm struggling here and I just can't get out of this funk that I'm in, who can I help? Can I help a colleague at work? Can I help a client? Can I get involved with one of my charities? Can I teach? Can I coach? When you go and help somebody else and take that off of you, you might have been, I don't want to say drowning in, but it may have held you back a bit. When you start to help somebody else, man, do you feel better.
Yeah.
When you get out of it, you're like, you know what? I feel better. This is going to be okay. A lot of times that will happen. So, you know, the gratitude, the blessings, prepare your day. I think that helps keep you scheduled and on a regiment that will get you through some of the tough times when you say, hey, you know what, this is on my calendar. I have to do this. And show up and be present. So I think preparing your day is very important. Looking at that day in the morning. And then when you go to bed, some of the things that I practice that has really helped me over the years is no TV or news or anything negative that's going to take up space before I go to bed, because that's not going to lead most likely to a good night's sleep. And plus, there's a lot of toxicity out there on some of the things that we put on when we start scrolling or we put on the news or things of that nature. So prepare that. You know, I never used to do this, but it's a win for me now, is I stop taking texts, emails, phone calls at a certain time every day. I try to be done by 7 o'clock, where I won't answer anything, 6 o'clock, where I'm not. And if I have a family event or if I have something scheduled, I'm done. But I'll get up early enough the next day to take care of it. And so I feel when you're able to do those things and not be distracted with every time you get pinged to respond or react. Because a lot of times some of those questions, calls, inquiries may be triggering. Oh, we have a problem. There's an issue here. We need to fix. Nothing's going to get fixed at 9 o'clock at night. It's going to wait till the morning. Unless it's life and death. We're talking about sales. The sales transaction will still be there in the morning for us all to regroup and figure it out. So like, I used to be the one that would be up all hours of the night trying to figure out a problem, but it never gets solved. And so that would take away from my time, my productive time with whatever it was, a hobby or an interest or my family.
I think that's massive for me. Yeah, I'm 51 years ago. We survived without a mobile phone. It's just, people would have panic attacks if they've lost their phone. We are just have been conditioned to respond, like you said, react to notifications. They could be pinging all day. I have to have my stuff switched off. And like you said, setting your boundaries, because so years ago, somebody couldn't get a hold of you. It's not a problem. They get a hold of you the following day. But we've found ourselves in this place of, we feel that we have to react to so much. We have to respond that instant because of the way things have gone, because there are so many different social media platforms. You've got different apps on your phone. I don't know how people get stuff done sometimes if you're responding to all the notifications, because there's only so many hours in a day. And I think that is massive. Do you think people are struggling with anxiety because of what you've just said there?
Yeah. How many people, we could take a poll, how many people actually, when they wake up, if they wake up in the middle of the night, check their phones? Try to go back to bed if you check your phone in the middle of the night.
Yes. It's not good, is it? It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah, nothing's gonna be that important. So yes, I suppose it depends on what you're doing. I suppose if people have got a job, and this is the thing, like you just said before, about having some kind of plan, prepping your day, or and then having some kind of routine at night before you go to bed, so that you do get a proper night's sleep. When people are in a job, they have all this set out. Do you find a difference when people are they're an entrepreneur or they are working for themselves? Maybe they don't have these things in place, which is causing them, it's just not helping them move forward, is it?
I think it's just individual. What I see is individualized. A lot of the entrepreneurs they're successful entrepreneurs. They're successful because they are able to compartmentalize, and they are able to shut it down, and they are able to rejuvenate and re-energize for the next day. I think there's also high-level performers that are frantic, like I was a few years ago, where I would just be answering everything and doing everything, but I was suffering in so many other areas in my life. I think it's where that individual is in their particular...
Yeah, so it is important to have some kind of routine, setting yourself up for success every single day.
Absolutely.
So what would your morning routine be?
I have a very regimented morning routine. I'm training for another Ironman coming up this weekend, and so my morning starts very early, anywhere between 3:15 and 3:45 a.m. And so then, but it immediately starts with some breathing, breath work, a little bit of meditation, all combined. I do write down my blessings. I'm not just saying to do this. I'm saying because, I'm doing it and it's really helped me. Hopefully, if you stop practicing, it'll help the listeners. I then drop to my knees, say some prayers, again, part of the blessings, and I have my coffee. That's when I do check my day ahead, last night's emails, and the coffee and doing all that and having some supplements and getting ready for my day takes about 45 minutes. But it's a break. Nobody else is awake. Nobody else is doing anything. No one's calling you. There's no new emails coming in that you have to. There's no new text coming in at that time. And then I start my work. Then I'll do a workout or a training or whatever. And however long that's scheduled for that day, when I'm done, then I'm ready to begin my day. My calendar.
And so do you think that if people did have some kind of, everybody can have a whatever their morning ritual is, I call it a morning ritual, everyone has one, right? Some people have to have they're not going to operate with a cup of coffee, or they've got to have the shower first, whatever has their what their system is, that is going to help them be successful in anything that they want to do, not just training for a marathon, but not just in sales, but just in everything in life. Do you think that's what's missing in general if they don't have that in place for themselves? How do people get the discipline to actually do it because it's easy to say it. And I'm going to admit, I do have my morning ritual, and yeah. I didn't do it. And I didn't do it this morning. I didn't do it this morning. There will be times when I can, yeah, fall off the bandwagon. But I know the difference, because the difference in my productivity is never as good. It's such a fascinating subject that something as simple as having a specific morning ritual in place, because I don't think people understand the power behind it, how it can really set your day to flow properly. I'm going to be far more productive, get things done in a much shorter time when I've done it. And yeah, and yet there can still be days where, yeah, now something's happened and I haven't done it. But yeah. How do people stay so disciplined to do it? I think being an athlete has something to do with it as well. Do you think you're more conditioned to be a little bit more disciplined with certain things?
It drives, yes. But it'll drive me so crazy that if I didn't do my ritual or routine, that I would feel less equipped to handle the challenges life throws at me that day, just like you said. And that's factual for me. Like, I feel railroaded. And it's always, I'm always trying to make sure I'm ahead, watching what's going on. And there is a little bit of anxiety. There is a little bit of angst that goes along with that when you don't feel right, because you may not have done the things that would help you get through the day. Now think about your team, oftentimes is your own self-care. So whatever it is, if you're just having some time to yourself to think with your coffee or your tea or your water or whatever, or your meditation or your breath work or going for a walk in nature or walking the dog or whatever it is, if that's part of your routine and that gets taken away from you, you have a tendency to play catch up because you're not prepared as much to have, when life throws some things at you. What I try to do is if I can't do what I need to do, I'll supplement like with a variation or whatever. And it happens. Nothing's perfect and goes according to schedule. But what I don't do is I don't let no matter how frustrating or upsetting the curveball that got thrown at me before I in my routine happened, I still try to find like, all right, this happened, this is not great, but we'll still be okay.
Work through it. But yeah, self-care. So many people do think they almost like see it as a luxury. And I mean, it may be different for men and women as well. I know a lot of women that almost feel they would feel guilty about spending time on themselves because they feel like they should be doing so many things for others. Whereas I see it the opposite, as like we've just said, that this is what fuels your day. So actually, so it starts with self, right? You can't give from an empty cup. So having that specific time in the morning to spend on you, because everybody else is going to benefit from that anyway. But there is, do you think that we've not really been conditioned throughout school to have this kind of mindset? This is something, do you think, did you learn this later on, being an entrepreneur, being a salesperson? Do you think you would have had that kind of routine if you had another job?
Even as a little kid, I learned to the importance of an early wake up. I had a paper when I was 10 years old, and 7 days a week, up at 5 o'clock in the morning before school. That was just me. That's how I'm wired. Other people are wired with their biorhythms at night. I need to do all my stuff in the morning, and I'm much better in the morning and through the day than I am at night. A lot of people just get rolling at night. It takes them until 2 o'clock to get, and that's fine. So whatever you need to find that works for you. And I want to go back to what you said about people that feel guilty about taking care of themselves. When you take care of yourself, don't you show up much better for everybody else, as opposed to being run down and just wanting to be a martyr or just, hey, I need to help this person, I need to help this person, and you're just losing your mind. And you're also compromising your health. When you're working on all of that stress about taking care of somebody else and you don't take the time to take care of yourself, you're gonna get run down.
Absolutely. 100%. But it doesn't seem to be, maybe it's taught in schools, maybe with sports, primarily, but I don't know whether the kids are growing up with this information that it's so important for the mindset.
Yeah.
So for you, with your, I know you're an author, so is this the name of your book? Tell us about some of the books you've written.
Oh, Thriving in the Storm. It came out in October of last year.
Fantastic. And so that's to help people that, yeah, to become unstuck, I'm presuming.
Unstuck. That's perfect. Yeah.
So with regards to that, you believe that everybody is capable of doing so much more than they are, I don't know, settling? Do you think people are settling?
I think when you don't strive for your best, yeah, sure, you settle.
And how is this affecting them emotionally?
If you accomplish something and you feel like you left it all out there and you gave it everything you had, you're going to feel that much better than you would if you said, you know what, I just went through the motions, I coasted, I didn't give it everything I had, I could have done better, then you have the guilt. But that's okay. Guilt can be motivational too, to go out and try it again or try a version of it or try something else. And I'm not talking about sports necessarily. It could be anything, whatever you set up. It could be a work project. It could be a family project. It could be a creative project or an athletic project, whatever you're looking to do.
So for people, when you're talking about the storm, is this book relating to COVID or?
No, it became part of it. And in the last chapter, we talk about significance, creating a legacy. And one of the things that I mentioned is I had, while during COVID, I was actually running the Boston Marathon for Make-A-Wish. And 60 days prior to the marathon, I was walking down my stairs on my way to a run, and I tore my quadricep. I missed the two bottom stairs, completely tore it and rolled up into my hip, and it was a excruciating, painful injury. And so I was down and out, had surgery the next day to repair it. And everyone said, oh, sorry to hear, this is too bad, you're going to be laid up for a while. And we'll get you to run for Make-A-Wish next year if you want to register with your bib and all that. And I said, Make-A-Wish is an organization with kids with critical illnesses that don't have a choice but to fight for their life in many cases. And why am I going to give up if I can potentially do something still? And the next day I wasn't sure how I could do it, but I ended up doing the marathon, the Boston Marathon on crutches.
Oh.
60 days later, and raised, the silver lining there was raising so much more money than I would have raised, and all the news coverage and awareness that brought in additional donations to the Make-A-Wish organization that really helped. And when I talk about thriving, it would have been easy, and I would have gotten a pass from everybody if I just laid low and gave the reason that I'm not doing this because of my injury. I would have got a pass from 99 out of 100 people. But because I wanted to do it and I needed to thrive and I needed to get to that next level and I wanted to make a difference and not be down and out and not, because I know it would have depressed me if I stayed laid up like I was and didn't do anything for that period of time. So it was helping me, but it helped me more to do something for the organization and the difference
wow.
I made with the awareness.
And that was the $500,000, was it, that you raised for that?
No, that's been ongoing. That's been over 15 years. But yes, this was 10 times the amount that I would have raised if I just ran it without crutches.
So there you go. Again, isn't it funny how different people could have, again, that could have been used as an excuse, but you chose to turn it into a positive and an opportunity to actually, you ended up raising more money for them than maybe you would have done if you'd ran. But you did it on crutches 60 days later.
Yeah.
How long did that take you? I can't imagine doing 26 miles.
It was the training that I started. It was when I first started that 60 days prior was, it was going to take me close to 20 hours to do that many hours, to do that 26 miles, because I was so slow and the crutches were rubbing up against the armpits and just chafing and bleeding and all sorts of stuff, and the leg and everything was just a mess. but I practiced. I actually trained on crutches for 60 days, like legitimately trained. And so I ended up doing that marathon on crutches around the track because they allowed us to do it. Because it's still COVID and we could do virtual. They wouldn't let me bring the crutches into the Boston Marathon liability. I tried, but they shot that down. Understandably. So I did it in 6 hours and 17 minutes.
Wow. My goodness. That's going something. No crutches.
Yeah. I think, I just wanted to get it over with.
Oh dear, yes, I can't really imagine doing that. It's bad enough running it, so to take longer and then on crutches on top, that many people I think would have given up by that. So yes, that's what sets you apart then. Yes, that every challenge you're having, then you're just finding a way to push forward regardless.
Yep.
That isn't it, but isn't it? See, this is what sort of fascinates me with all this stuff is the fact that some of that could have come from, because would you have had the same outlook if you hadn't had, when we talk about childhood trauma, you're saying that you were never told that you were good enough or anything like that. Now, if you had the opposite, right, and lots of support, would that have given you the motivation and driving force to prove people wrong and keep going, isn't it? It's a bit of there's a sort of almost a contradiction there. Does that make sense? It's like some of the bad stuff that happens to us actually turns out to be a real positive moving forward.
Sure. No, I agree with that. And who wouldn't? Who knows, right? Who knows? If I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth and had this beautiful life, who knows what would have happened? I'd like to think I would have still turned out okay. But so it's pretty funny, Karen. Do you know how many people that have read the book and they're almost apologetic that they say, I didn't have really a bad childhood. I had a pretty good childhood. I had a pretty good upbringing. And I was like, don't apologize. That's great. I'm happy for you. But that's a good thing. So there's wherever you're coming from, there's always something that you can use and to propel you forward. Whether it's good or bad, or there's always life lessons in everything that has happened.
I think it's just an inspiration because so many people do have gone through certain adversities in life, is that it is down to you, the buck stops at you, whether you turn it into a positive or a negative. I just see it as a real positive outlook on stuff happens. Not everybody has things perfect, and yet it can still be a driving force for you to really achieve what it is you want to achieve. It's just funny, isn't it, that you think, what are the options when bad things happen to you? Yeah, give up and that's it, drop down, or you get up and push forward. And for those that have gone through anything that has been a challenge, I just think it's a real sort of positive outlook to say, look, it doesn't make you. Right. So you can turn it into whatever you want to turn it into. It's great motivation. Great motivation. So for the listeners, if they can't see the information down below. So do you have any other books? Where can people find Thriving in the Storm?
Yeah. So they could go to thrivinginthestorm.com. There's the journaling, the morning and evening scheduled journaling. We call that bookending our day, and that's part of the routines. There's some emotional charts in there, so you can check in with how you're feeling, check those emotions. There's the exercises that are in the book. There's 21 exercises that we point out in the book, but they're also downloadable on the website, thrivinginthestorm.com, and they can reach out to me there as well.
Fantastic. And the other thing that I wanted to ask you right from the beginning, because I'd never heard of it.
Yes.
Was this second degree black belt in Krav Maga? Am I saying it right?
Yes, Krav Maga. Yes.
Krav Maga.
It's Israeli combat fighting style. And it's really it's an easier technique that combines jiu-jitsu, kempo, Muay Thai, karate, boxing. And it just brings it all together. It's a very practical type of self-defense that anybody can learn, some self-defense techniques that and help them if, you know, God forbid something were to happen.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, no, I've heard of a lot of martial arts, but that was definitely one that I've not heard from. What's next for Bill?
We're doing a lot of coaching a lot of folks right now. We're releasing a course, a thriving mindset course, high performance. It should be out in the next short time. By the time this airs, our course will be released. And if you want to check that out, it'll be on the website as well.
And who is that aimed at? Who are your target audience?
It's for those that have been battling and they just can't find a way to get unstuck. They may have a lot of self-doubt, unworthiness. They may have some past issues, past trauma that they're trying to work through, and try to get them to that level as fast as we possibly can on that thriving mindset rather than the victim or survival mindset.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been great speaking to you, hearing about your book. So for the listeners, you know where to go to grab a copy. And to everybody else, I will be back on Thursday with a coffee with Karen. Bye for now.
Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of